Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And our first guest today is Arianna Huffington, co-founder and editor-in-chief of The Huffington Post, and author of a new book called Third World America, How Our Politicians Are Abandoning the Middle Class and Betraying the American Dream. But Arianna may be making news this week mostly for footing the bill for providing free buses for thousands of people to travel from New York and elsewhere to the Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert rally in D.C. this Saturday. We'll talk about it all. Hi, Arianna. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Great to be with you.
Let's begin with the rally. Are you really paying for all those buses?
We are. We are having over 200 buses and transporting over 10,000 people, leaving at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. I'll be there. Brian, are you joining us?
I will be here.
But you will be asleep, right?
At 6 a.m. Saturday morning, probably so. But how many? So all the buses are from New York, or are you doing this from multiple cities?
All the buses are from New York, but there are people from surrounding areas. Like I was speaking at Stony Brook University last night, and there are people coming from Stony Brook. There are people coming from Connecticut, from New Haven, you know, from surrounding areas to New York to board our buses on a Saturday morning.
Multiple locations. I see that at least some are leaving from Citi Field, where the Mets play. Not your, you know, symbol of victory, but I guess a central location. Any other locations?
No, all the buses are leaving from Citi Field, but for people to get on the bus, they have to have pre-registered, because that was the only way for us to know how many people were coming. So,
and how do they do that?
That has been done over the last 4 weeks. Registration is now closed.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. What's all that costing you?
It's costing us a few $100,000, but we consider it completely worth it.
How seriously are you taking this event, and how much do you see it as just comedy?
No, we are taking it very seriously. We are seeing it the way Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are seeing it, as completely nonpartisan, completely not endorsing one political party or another, or one candidate or another, but endorsing sanity, literally endorsing rationality, the possibility of disagreeing with people and still not demonizing them, disagreeing with people without assuming they are Hitler or communists, or taking the country down to perdition. And that is so important right now, at this moment in our history, when, as you know, Brian, throughout every period of deep economic anxiety, there is a tendency to scapegoat and to demonize and to look for enemies inside the state. And if we're going to prevent that from taking over our politics and our civic life, we need to take a stand on sanity. And that's why I love the concept of the rally, and we wanted to be completely part of it.
As I'm sure you know, Jon Stewart is taking some heat from some progressives, some on Huffington Post, for seeming to offer a false equivalency between liberal excesses in that direction and conservative excesses. And you always speak out against false equivalencies in the media. But, for example, Mark Engler on Alternet wrote that the Tea Party and Fox News extremism is so pervasive and ubiquitous, and for Stewart to equate something that Code Pink said at some rally with that just misses the point of who's dominating the conversation in America and what impact they're having. Does Engler have a point?
Yes, but the point remains that if there are people who are saying that 9/11 was an inside job, or that George Bush was behind it, I mean, that is really the same kind of problem as having people saying that Obama was not born in this country and he has some kind of pre-colonial view that wants to destroy America. You know, so that's why the signs that we are preparing and that others are preparing have to do with things like 9/11 was an outside job. Can we just get over that? If you're going to paint a Hitler mustache on someone, make sure it's Hitler. It's stuff like that. And I really think this rally goes completely beyond left and right. And it's really entirely about rationality, you know, about not letting our lizard brains, which are activated during times of fear and anxiety, dominate the discourse.
We're doing our election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, and today's topic is true or false, President Obama has betrayed his base. How much do you think he's betrayed his base? You've certainly been critical at many times.
Well, you know, I don't really see it as anything to do with his base. I see it as having to do with the public interest and with the middle class. And I think, yes, he has betrayed the middle class. He has not made the middle class his priority. He has not brought the same sense of urgency that he brought to saving Wall Street, to saving Main Street. Remember that famous weekend when all the political and financial establishments came together and effectively said, we cannot allow the financial system to collapse. We don't have never had the same kind of urgency about jobs, about the fact, as I say, in third world America, that we have 26 million people out of work or underemployed. And the president has sent a lot of mixed messages. He set up a deficit commission before he set up a jobs commission. He has claimed that we can freeze all discretionary spending, but not military spending. He's pursuing an unwinnable war in Afghanistan, which is not in our national security interest, but which is absorbing hundreds of billions of dollars that we need to spend here at home to build our nation, to build our infrastructure, to help small businesses create jobs. So these are very serious matters. As I travel around the country, I am stunned by what's happening in the lives of millions of people, college kids graduating without being able to find jobs, men and women in their 40s or 50s with college degrees, who've had good jobs, losing them and not being able to find others. But you don't get that sense of urgency at the White House.
Now, the president would probably argue that he's had that sense of urgency from day one. The first thing that he did was to introduce the stimulus package, which was all about creating or saving billions of jobs long before he created a commission on the deficit or anything else. And look at all the blowback he's gotten for that.
Well, but that is the problem. The stimulus package was good but inadequate. It saved jobs and helped create some, but as Lloyd George said, you cannot jump across a chasm in two leaps. They underestimated the economic crisis, Brian, and that's the problem. His head of economic, the head of his economic policy team, Larry Summers, was going on all the shows telling us that there would be growth in the spring. He sounded like Chauncey Gardner, expecting unemployment to be down at 8%. And they got it wrong. I mean, that's the fact. If they had not gotten it wrong, there would have been a huge and really targeted stimulus that would not have included $300 million of tax cuts, that would have really targeted our infrastructure. And they would not have done healthcare before they did jobs, because jobs is at the heart of what is ailing Americans at the moment, and that should have been the highest priority.
Arianna Huffington, my guest on WNYC, and your new book is called Third World America, How Our Politicians Are Abandoning the Middle Class and Betraying the American Dream. Why invoke the phrase third world?
Because I wanted to sound the alarm while there is still time to course correct. It's a jarring phrase. We don't associate America with the third world. But if we continue to the policies that allow the middle class to crumble, we will become a third world country. And the middle class is what makes this country America. It's at the heart of the American promise, the upward mobility. And now, Brian, we have 100 million Americans who are worse off than their parents were at a similar age, and we have two-thirds of Americans who are saying they expect their children to be worse off than they are. That's really not what America is about. And if we can sound the alarm before the iceberg hits the Titanic and bring that sense of urgency that is missing, we can prevent it. And if I just can say one thing, and one reason why I'm ultimately optimistic, which is all in chapter 5, so if your listeners can only read one chapter, please read chapter 5. there are amazing things happening around the country at the local level. There are people using social media to connect with each other, to create their own jobs. Go to Etsy.com or Bonanza.com. And there are people who are creating sites to help each other, even when they have nothing to give except time, like Seth Reams in Portland, Oregon, who started WeVeGotTimeToHelp.org, which is now spreading around the country. So I see Washington being broken, and I see the solutions at the moment, at least in the short term, coming out of cities and communities with Americans kind of taking matters into their own hands, not despairing, not turning into anger and scapegoating, and turning lives around.
You're originally from Europe. Would we be better off if we were more like France, with even teenagers protesting in the streets against raising the retirement age from 60 years old? Many Americans are shocked that's politically possible over there with that coalition, whether they agree with it or not.
We're different, and I'm very, very grateful that I'm an American. I'm completely committed to America turning things around in our own unique way. We're never going to be like any other country. And I think that the spirit of irrepressible energy that I see around cities and communities is what is so deeply American.
And lastly, on your judgments of the president again, poll after poll is reflecting an enthusiasm gap. People who see themselves as coming out to vote against the president's agenda are much more fired up from the right than people coming out to support it, which could result in a big Republican advantage in voter turnout and results, which I suspect is the last thing you want to see. Are you contributing to that by being so down publicly on the president?
Listen, I mean, my job is to speak about things as I see them. And there's no question that if Republicans take over the House, as they're expected to do, things will be worse for the middle class. There's no question about that. But we cannot stop ourselves from pointing out what has gone wrong and why we are where we are because of that. I mean, people need to recognize that that this is a really dangerous time for our country, both in terms of the economy and in terms of political stability.
Do you think the Colbert and Stewart rally could actually have an impact on voter turnout?
I hope that a lot of people will turn out to vote, more than turn out to vote during midterms, because it's really sad that we have such a drop-off between presidential elections and midterm elections. So if people can be activated to recognize once again that democracy is not a spectator sport, that it is not our job to simply vote every 4 years and expect our heroes to ride into Washington and fix things, that would be another great advantage and a great outcome of the rally.
Arianna Huffington, her new book is called Third World America, How Our Politicians Are Abandoning the Middle Class and Betraying the American Dream. She's also funding all those buses from Citi Field to the Jon Stewart Stephen Colbert rally in Washington on Saturday. Thanks so much for coming on, Arianna.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, Cornel West, among other guests yet to come. We'll also play some campaign commercials from around the country that are using New York as a foil, demonizing New York in places like Michigan and Kentucky to get people to vote for the candidates of their choice there. Stay with us. Cornel West is our next guest. The Princeton professor and author many times over is all over our world right now. He's become the co-host of the weekly program Smiley and West, which we air here on Saturday afternoons. He's doing a very intriguing WNYC event tonight in conversation with jazz pianist Randy Weston. We'll talk about that. And we're going to get his take on our 30 issues in 30 days topic for today, which is true or false, President Obama has betrayed his base. And Cornel West's recent memoir is now out in paperback called Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud, a memoir. Hello again, Brother West.
How are you doing, my dear brother? I want to salute you for the work you do. I always salute you, and rightly so. You're such a force for good, my brother.
You're very kind. And, you know, we did the book interview last year.
Absolutely.
And we talked about your life a lot, but I never asked you, what's the brother thing in the title? This is a white person's question, I guess, but you call me brother every time you come on. You call lots of people brother, and now you titled your memoir, Brother West. Is it from a certain moment of slang that you grew up with and then made part of your signature, or why do you use it so frequently?
I think that just on the deepest human level, we're all struggling to make our move from our mama's womb to our tomb. We're trying to work it out the best way we can, and in that sense, we're all profoundly brothers and sisters in the face of death, brothers and sisters wrestling with insecurity, fears, anxieties, trying to get a little love, and trying to get a little fun before we go.
And do you use it universally? You're going to go on Fox News and talk to Brother O'Reilly?
Brother O'Reilly, that's exactly right. Indeed, indeed, indeed. And of course, it has degrees and gradations of political solidarity, because it doesn't always in any way signify political solidarity, but it shows that deep human solidarity in terms of all of us being part of this human family trying to make sense of the world in face of our literal extinction.
I want to play for you one of the anguished moments of the election season that got a lot of media attention when it first happened, and get your take, because as you know, we're asking today whether President Obama has betrayed his base with this low turnout, seemingly very possible among Democrats. And this is the woman named Velma Hart, an Obama voter who raised her voice in some anguish to the president at a town hall meeting in September.
Quite frankly, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted of defending you, defending your administration, right, defending the mantle of change that I voted for, right, and deeply disappointed with where we are right now. I've been told that I voted for a man who said he was going to change things in a meaningful way for the middle class. I'm one of those people, and I'm waiting, sir. I'm waiting. I don't feel it yet. And I thought, well, it wouldn't be in great measure, I would feel it in some small measure. I have two children in private school, and the financial recession has taken an enormous toll on my family. My husband and I have joked for years that we thought we were well beyond the hot dogs and beans era of our lives. Right. But quite frankly, it's starting to knock on our door and ring true that that might be where we're headed again. And quite frankly, Mr. President, I need you to answer this honestly. Is this my new reality?
So, Cornel West, did you hear that moment when it happened, and how representative of something important do you think it was?
Well, I think she was eloquent, which is to say is wisdom speaking in the language of Cicero and Quintilian. I deeply resonate with what she's saying. There's no doubt that when Barack Obama chose Geithner and Summers, it was a slap in the face of poor people. It was a slap in the face of working people. It was clear that jobs and homes and crime would be afterthoughts, and the first priority would be the investment banks, Wall Street, elites, and oligarchs. It was a very revealing move. Many of us, of course, began crying out back then, even when the choice was made, saying, wait a minute, I thought your base was poor people, working people, young people, anti-war people, black people, brown people, gay brothers, lesbian sisters, and so forth. Why are you going straight to the Wall Street oligarchs and straight to the corporate elite's favorite economists?
But could that all be what he's about when you have the right out there saying he's a socialist, he's a Kenyan anti-colonialist, all this stuff?
They're going to say it anyway, Brother Brian. They're going to say it anyway. You might as well be like FDR and Abe Lincoln and just straighten your back up and say, you know what, bring it on. Yes, I defend poor and working people. If that's what you call socialism, then yes, I defend him. You remember what FDR said, right? You economic royalists, you are my enemies. I welcome those kind of enemies because I stand for justice. And Barack Obama's got Martin Luther King Jr.'s bust right in his Oval Office, right? Mm. What did Martin King stand for? Justice, 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 fairness, 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 especially for poor and working people. So that if, in fact, you're going to say, I've got to begin to triangulate early the way Clinton's opportunistic regimes often did, you begin triangulating early, obsessed with Fox News, obsessed with the right wing, then you're going to end up betraying your base early. And right now we are bearing the cost. If he had hit jobs and homes and crime as a priority, it would have nipped the bud of this right-wing populism of the Tea Party fellow citizens who have now seized the center stage and are pushing us off the brink in their right-wing way.
And I want to put into fair context, Velma Hart, whose clip we played, she said she remains an Obama supporter and would vote for him again, just to give the full context there. And I want to bring in for just a minute one of the bloggers on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Jamie Floyd, a legal analyst and sometimes guest host of this show. Jamie has a blog post up right now arguing that the president has not betrayed his base. Hey, Jamie, and you're on with Cornel West. Want to make your case?
Well, it's a great privilege to be on, of course, with Dr. West,
it's
who I should
say. To be on with Sister Jamie.
And I should say Brother West, who I met back during my time as an advisor to President Clinton. And I remember so well the lesson that Brother West taught us then, that the legacy of a president cannot be judged in the moment. It takes years, decades, and certainly we cannot judge the presidency of Barack Obama a short 24 months.
That's true.
And I fear, and really this is the point of my blog, Brian, and I stand with Thelma Hart, that we will limit the full measure of Barack Obama's promise if we fail to support his agenda at the polls next month, if we hand power back to the GOP. And
I
think that is why Thelma Hart will, despite all of her disappointment, turn out on November 2nd and vote and continue to vote Democratic.
Oh, no, you are absolutely right. We have got to fight the right-wing takeover of Congress and State Hall and City Hall. There's no doubt about that. It's just a matter of also speaking the truth in terms of our disappointments, but our disappointments in no way paralyzes us or renders us apathetic. We still have to fight the right wing, so we've got to show up next week. We've got to fight off the Republican conservative takeover.
And this is why, Brian, your question to Arianna Huffington, and I completely agree earlier in your top of the show segment, Brian, Arianna Huffington said we can't abandon the middle class. But the answer is not to return if you agree with the promises Barack Obama made in the campaign. The answer is not to return Washington to the GOP. Mm-hmm. Your question to her, though, raised some very important concerns about the so-called enthusiasm gap. What are we doing when we pose the question, has Barack Obama abandoned his base? And that's why in my blog, Brian, I asked the reverse question or the converse or the inverse. Is the base abandoning Obama?
Mm.
That was my question.
No, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think, for example, you look at it from the vantage point of labor. Has labor abandoned Obama? No, I don't think so. He didn't push for the free choice Employment Act, but labor's still there. They're still spending millions of dollars. They're patient in that regard. Has the black community abandoned Obama? 90% are still in his corner, but we know the levels of social misery, of increasing incarceration, unemployment, unavailable housing. The suffering is there, but the black base is still there, so they haven't abandoned. The labor movement hasn't abandoned, I don't think. But I think many of us are deeply disappointed. But we're blues folk. We make disappointment a constant companion and still fight.
Jamie, thanks for chiming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Brother West, for all your work.
Thank you, my dear sister. You stay strong now.
Jamie Floyd, you can read her latest blog post at our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. We also have a poll up there on this question. Did President Obama abandon his base? So far, of our three choices, 20% are saying no, 29% are saying yes, and 50% are saying it's complicated. So go add your voice to that poll at itsafreecountry.org. And to end on a bluesy note, tonight at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center, Cornel West will take part in a conversation about politics, race, and music with the legendary jazz pianist Randy Weston. This is a WNYC event sponsored by the Green Space, but being held at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center at the Borough of Manhattan Community College on Chambers Street near the number 1 train. Tickets include an autographed copy of Cornel West's memoir, Brother West. We are rolling some Randy Weston music here.
Yeah. this.
Let's give him a few seconds in the clear. And Cornel West, we know you're a music lover. What's special about Randy Weston?
Randy Weston is a towering artist. He's one of the grand figures in the history of jazz, who connects Brooklyn with West Africa, who connects sophisticated sound with political struggle, whose personality is sterling, who's got a heart of gold, and who was so close to Monk that one can say that Monk and Weston go hand in hand. I can't wait to really be in dialogue with my brother. I'm humble and I'm honored to be in conversation with him.
I once saw him at a little club on the Upper West Side, now defunct. I was about 3 feet away from him, and it was audio heaven. What do you think you're going to talk about tonight?
Brother, it's going to be improvisational all the way down. But you can imagine, if we're talking about jazz, we're going to talk about freedom, we're going to talk about truth, we're going to talk about justice, we're going to talk about style, and we're going to talk about smiles.
Can conversation be like jazz?
It can be a semblance, but the music is always so much deeper than any conversation, my brother.
Go to WNYC.org/thegreenspace for tickets to tonight's Weston and West conversation. You can hear Cornel West in conversation with Tavis Smiley every weekend on WNYC, and his new memoir out in paperback now called Brother West. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. You stay strong. Thank you so much, though, Brother Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.